Everybody, welcome into the Lakers Collective. 7 wins in a row for LA. We're going to talk about what this all means for the team. Austin Reeves, an all-star, all-NBA, what his season is stacking up to look like right now. We'll talk about the Lakers offense that is continuing to thrive. We'll get into the upcoming stretch of games, which is going to be critical for LA. And we'll take some questions and comments from those of you that are joining us live in the chat. Welcome in on the YouTube channel. I'm Trevor Lane, joined as always by Jason Timpf and Jovan Buha twice a week now. Happy December, guys. Happy to see you here.
Let's go.
It's good to see you guys. I'm excited for some tougher games on the schedule, too. It's going to be fun to see this team face some real challenges.
That's right. You know, right before we came on, Jovan and I were talking a bit about that, about the schedule coming up and how this is going to really, you know, reveal a lot about this team. And we're going to get into that in just a bit here on the show. Before we dive into our topics, though, everybody in the chat, if you've not done so yet, do me a favor real quick. Just check and see if you are subscribed. And if the answer is no, you're not subscribed, do us a favor and hit that subscribe button. We want to push our subscribers up as high as we possibly can. So hit that subscribe button, turn on those notifications. And after the show, if you have a chance, if you think of it, give us a 5-star rating and review over on Apple Podcasts. Great way to help us go and help us grow. Appreciate all of you for joining us. Today's sponsor is SeatGeek, and we'll talk more about them in just a bit. But guys, let's start with Austin Reeves. He's been absolutely phenomenal. I think he is, no question, an all-star. I've worried in the past that he wouldn't make it to the all-star team simply because of how much talent there is at his position, but he's been so phenomenal all season long. Jason, it'll start with you. I know you discussed this a bit on your show. Austin, taking it to another level this year.
Yeah, so I tried really hard to think about which players in the league have been better than Austin this year. And it's the top-tier guys, Luka, Shea, Jokic, and Giannis. Your up-and-coming stars like Cade and Wemby, I'd say Anthony Edwards has been a touch better. Some of the established guys like Donovan Mitchell and Steph Curry, I saw the stat this morning, the Warriors still somehow have a 119 offensive rating with Steph on the floor this season. So there's still some guys that are producing at a level that you would say is ahead of where Austin's been. But after that, it's like, it's all reputation. Like, Austin's played better basketball this year than Jalen Brunson. You know, Austin's played better basketball this year than a lot of guys that are further down that list. I have him as the 10th best player in the NBA coming into today. Now, again, reputation is reputation. No one's about to move Austin into the 10th best player kind of reputationally until he can sustain this for years, like the guys that he's been better than at this point into the season. I think one of the things with Austin that gets glossed over is he's a much better player than his metrics would lead you to believe. I shouldn't even say metrics, his counting stats would lead you to believe. I thought Darius Soriano on the LFR pod did an amazing job breaking this down the other day. The real difference between players like Austin, who came up as a role player and had to learn how to be good players on the margins. I'm watching Philly Atlanta last night, and I'm watching Dyson Daniels just back cut Tyrese Maxey for offensive rebounds and dunks and stuff right around the basket. That's killing his team in crunch time in important moments. And there are a lot of guys in the league that average over 25 points a game that give up a bunch of it in the other areas. And don't get me wrong, Austin has his athletic limitations, and every once in a while he'll get picked on one-on-one or have a situation where his body's not really up to the challenge. But mentally, he's so sharp, so fundamentally sound, so good on all these details around what he provides, which is top-tier superstar-level shot creation, that it's become become undeniable at this point. This is a player that, regardless of whether it's with LeBron, with Luka, with neither of them, whatever the circumstances are, this dude has just flatly been one of the very best basketball players in the world this season. And it not only changes the dynamic for the future of the team as you look like at him as a partner with Luka, as like a perennial all-NBA type of candidate, it's also something within the scope of this season that makes this team that much more dangerous, as they have now become the number one half-court offense in the entire NBA. And like I was watching just this morning, just for poops and giggles, I went back and watched every made basket they had over the last couple of games. And like, they're making it look easy. They're killing teams easy. Guard them 2-on-2, Austin and Luka torch you in pick and roll. Put 3 into that action or put 2 on the ball, they're torching you in these 4-on-3s now. This is really starting to look like one of those special offenses in recent NBA history.
It's been fantastic what we've been seeing out of the Lakers on the offensive end. Again, when they do blitz Luka, they're getting so – it's just automatic. It's becoming muscle memory when they're able to attack teams in those four-on-three situations. A lot of fun to watch them just pick teams apart by making them make choices over and over again and punishing them for those choices. We got a super chat coming in. By the way, most of the chat questions we'll put at the end, but this super chat was on topic. Why isn't Reeves in the most improved player conversation? That's weird. Jovan, should he be? And I also have a question coming in saying, why don't you guys talk about how bad Austin's defense is? And I know you've got some thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, you're teeing me up here to be the Austin defender per usual. Well, if you listen to Buha's block and actually Beyond the Block specifically, I had Austin Reeves as my most improved player 2 weeks ago when we did way too early awards. So I am talking about Austin Reeves as the most improved player in the NBA. And, you know, I think that there are several guys who have a claim for that. And, you know, one of the archetypes I was looking at the time a couple of weeks ago, my top three was Reeves, Giddey, and Denny Avdija. And for each of the three, I was arguing that it is really difficult to go from like a good to really good player to a great player and making that jump, especially for, you know, Denny is a former lottery pick and so is Giddey. But like, I think those guys have led their respective teams in ways that we didn't necessarily envision them being like the number one on at the time, a good team. Now, Chicago and Portland have come back down to earth. Both teams have, you know, fell below 500 since I did that show, but that is even more of an argument for why Austin should probably be the most improved leader right now. And something I noted last night on my show, and I've been noting that the last few streams I've done, is like, I think this has gone from the best offensive backcourt or slash best backcourt in the NBA to, is this just the best duo in the NBA right now between Luka and Austin? And it's funny because going into the season, I thought it was going to be Luka and LeBron. And that was before we knew the extent of LeBron's injury and how long he was going to be out for. But I mean, I'm not going to name any names, but there was a prominent podcast that did a top five duos in the NBA, and they did not have Luka and LeBron in that, which I thought was a bit absurd. But to me, like on paper, that was two top 10 guys going into the season. Now, in part because LeBron has, you know, missed the first 14 games, I'm not going to put Luka and LeBron in that conversation for now. But I think you could put Luka and Austin in that conversation for now. And with what they're doing, like right now, they are the highest scoring duo in NBA history for a season, which is just ridiculous, right? So now Austin has to sustain this, and I do think the numbers will come down a little bit as LeBron assumes higher usage, plays a little bit more, and gets more into the offense compared to I think he's been more of the third option. I think it'll probably end up being more of like a two-way 2B situation. But you know, Jason mentioned it. I went through the list, and you know, with, especially with the context of 16 American players, 8 international players with the new All-Star format, the only guys I think you probably put ahead of Austin right now are Steph, Cade Cunningham, Anthony Edwards, Donovan Mitchell, Tyrese Maxey, and maybe I think Jalen Brunson gets in just as being like a top 10 guy the last couple of years. So that's 6 players. Then he's right there with Jaylen Brown, James Harden, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Julius Randle, Jalen Johnson, Amen Thompson, Evan Mobley, Jalen Duren, Scottie Barnes. Like, and I think he's ahead of a lot of those guys. So I think he's arguably the 7th or 8th All-Star in for the American side. And like, I did not anticipate that going into this season.
Well, and that's where it helps that the Lakers are the 2 seed as well right now, because those teams that are higher up in the standings, they tend to get rewarded with having more all-star players. Certainly, Luka will be in. LeBron's not going to have the games played, almost certainly, but we're going to see Austin Reeves, I think, get into the all-star conversation here. Where do you guys have, though, like, obviously, we have 75% of the season still to play. We're talking about Austin Reeves as an all-star. Should we be talking about Austin Reeves all NBA? Jason, what do you think about that?
I think right now he's third team at a minimum, and he's got a case for second team. Again, like when you factor in, and again, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to point to things like, oh, he plays alongside Luka. Well, you know, there's a situation where, as far as the way this team is constructed, they're winning games by being an elite defense. And to put it very simply, if Austin isn't as good as he is offensively to this point in the season, they're not sitting at 15-4 or whatever they are. They're somewhere, you know, closer to that, you know, middle tier of the NBA, which is super deep. There's like a dozen teams hovering around that like 12-8 type of mark. And the league is, it's very difficult to win night to night. And Austin has scrapped together wins, even with Luka out of the lineup. Austin brings that well-rounded approach we talked about earlier, which is, I think, missing a lot when you get to the star guards in the league. Like, Austin has been competing his ass off on the margins. And like, again, like, there's going to be matchups every once in a while where a team can pick on Austin for being a lesser athlete in one way or another. But I think in this particular season, he has not been an issue on the defensive end of the floor. That's been more of a team-wide issue in some other areas on the roster having to do with speed. And like, one of the things with Austin in particular too, is like, there is a downhill to the basket element that has been really, really necessary for this team. He's actually finishing at the rim 4 times per game, which is an extremely high number. It's somewhere right around the mid 30s ranked in the NBA. It's like 35, 36. To give you some perspective, look at like a big power wing like Jaylen Brown, who's having an awesome season. He's making 4.5 shots per game at the rim. Austin's like right up in that territory. He's scoring at the rim more than Paolo Banchero was before he got hurt. Austin's getting there, and he's finishing at just a preposterous rate for a guard with his skill level. His floater is absolutely deadly. The only thing you could really nitpick him on was his three-point shot, and he's been shooting the damn seams off the basketball over the course of the last couple of weeks. So, like, and especially off the catch, where he is obviously going to be super important as they get into some of their tougher matchups. Like, again, I don't know any way around it other than to say he's been one of the very best players in the world this season.
Yeah, you mentioned the rim numbers. 96th percentile, according to Cleaning the Glass, relative to his position at the rim. 100th percentile on the short mid, which, or mid-range shot, which means there's nobody better than him at that particular shot. He has been so efficient out there on the floor. Jovan, in the bigger scheme, as we get into, you know, the Lakers offense, what we've seen over this last stretch of 7 games, not always, you know, the best competition that the Lakers have been playing against. But now moving forward, you've got Austin playing at this incredible level, a level that I think even the biggest Austin optimists wouldn't have predicted him to be at. What does this mean moving forward for the Lakers offense here as we get into a more difficult portion of the schedule?
I think I'm really interested to see, as we were talking about before the show, what they look like against better competition, because I think, you know, I'm always thinking about like the counterpoint, the counter argument to any successful stretch or any tough stretch, right? And if the team's going on a skid, what are the bright spots? If the team's winning, what are some of the things that are maybe being glossed over due to the win streak? And for being honest, like the 7-game win streak, only one team at the time that the Lakers played them was above 500, and that was Milwaukee. And not just like above 500, like the other 4 teams that they've beaten are 4 of the 5 worst teams in the West right now by a decent margin. And like this New Orleans team last night was arguably the worst team in the NBA with who they had available, right? Like I think it's pretty close there between them and Brooklyn. So these are teams the Lakers should be beating. Now, we know the NBA is not a should league, right? Like you still have to show up. You have to beat the team. And the Lakers have had a few blowout wins here. And I think that the Clippers win was really impressive. The Milwaukee win was really impressive. The Dallas win.
It's worth mentioning that Kawhi and Anthony Davis played in those 2 games too, which was different than that. Those guys being
two different teams than they have been up to this point in the season. And then even last night's game was like, that was one of the 46 points in the first quarter, 77 in the first half, tied a season high, season low in turnovers, season high in blocks. So like they are playing really well. I do not, to be clear, like I do not want to discount that. I just think if you look at the upcoming schedule here, they got Phoenix tonight, second night of a back-to-back, at Toronto, at Boston, back-to-back. That's a really tough back-to-back going west to east. Then at Philly. So that's 3 games and 4 nights for them. Then they come back. They play San Antonio in the NBA Cup quarterfinals. And then I think they should be favored to win that game. And then they win that game, they probably go play OKC. So the next 6 games are all above, you know, teams above 500, really good teams, several of them on the road. So like, this is a nice test here of, okay, you took care of business. You beat the teams you're supposed to beat. You went 7-0. But now against teams that are above 500, teams that are playing well, including several tough road games, like, how do they fare? One One thing quickly, though, on Austin's defense, I just wanted to note that, you know, going back to that question, I realized I didn't answer it. Right now, the Lakers are 4.2 points per 100 possessions better with Austin on the floor defensively. And I think that's noteworthy just because every other starter, Luka, Rui, DeAndre Ayton, and LeBron, is negative. So the Lakers are defending that now, you know, team rating, defensive rating, obviously is a lineup stat, but I think that's noteworthy that every other starter, the Lakers are worse defensively with them on compared to Austin. So that indicates he has been a part of some of these bench groups that have tended to defend well, because the Lakers bench has been carrying them defensively at times with Laravia and Smart and Jackson Hayes. And like, so I think that's just worth noting that Austin, while he's not an all defense guy, he isn't even a positive defender some nights, he does fit into good defensive lineups well, and at a rate that the Lakers other starters have not up to this point.
Well, and that was not the case last season. If you dug into Austin's numbers from last year, they were not better defensively with him on the floor versus off. And so that does suggest, and we're still a little bit in small sample size territory, but that does suggest, you know, real improvement here from him. Look, it's not like Austin didn't hear all the conversation about him and his defense and all of that over the summer. I think we have seen significant defensive improvement. And Luka has been better defensively as well this year, and I think that's helped the team. Not that they're a good defense right now. I think they still have a ways to go in order to get there, and you know, we can talk about whether or not they will get there with the current personnel and team, or if there's moves to be made and all that. That's probably a different conversation. But I do think it's important to note that he has gotten better. The word about him continues to be that he is a bad defensive player, but I don't think that's what we've seen so far this season.
I think there's a huge difference. We've talked about this before, between a defender that is a liability physically versus a defender that's a liability mentally. Mm-hmm. Like, again, like take the Tyrese Maxey example. There are a lot of guards that are athletically equipped the way he is that have become elite defenders using their quickness and speed to stay in front of the ball and to attack the dribble pocket, force turnovers, and do all sorts of things. And, you know, like, but then Tyrese is just not paying attention and is costing his team a game in double overtime last night because he's not watching Dyson Daniels on back cuts and corner crashes. And, you know, that's the thing with Austin is like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend Austin never makes a mistake because he certainly does from time to time, but Austin is a fundamentally sound defender. And if he loses a battle, it's typically only going to be because of his physical limitations. And the thing with physical limitations is you can plan for them. You can plan for them within your scheme. Whereas a mental limitation, a player that's never in the right spot, a player that makes mistakes, gets back cut, does all these similar to that Karl Anthony Towns type of conversation that we always have surrounding the Knicks. When you have that type of defender, it's very difficult to game plan for because you'd never know what the hell he's going to do.
Yeah, that's a great point. That there's a difference between what Austin tends to, you know, get burned on defensively and what other guys will. And I do think he's taking real steps forward here. Interesting question coming in, though.
Like Rui, people in the chat are saying Rui. Rui's a perfect example.
I didn't want to pick. So many people feel like we pick on Rui too much, but yes, he is the example of it. Let's be fair. It's the flaw in Rui's game. Probably the biggest one is his off-ball attention to detail. There was the, I don't know if you guys saw the mix that was going around on X of different players yelling at Rui to get into position.
That was funny.
Yeah.
See that. No,
that was going around the other day. On topic here, this super chat said, if Austin Reeves is an all-star, will his contract jump? I mean, I would assume the nice thing about Austin though, is he's limited to right now we're probably talking about max salary here for Austin Reeves. Just if we're talking about a guy who's a clear-cut all-star, who, as Jason is saying, is a top 10 player in the NBA, that's a max contract, folks. I mean, it is what it is. The nice thing about Austin, though, is that he would still fall under the restrictions of a 25% max and not a 30% max on a 35% max. He'd be what we commonly call a fun max. In other words, his max salary is not $50+ million starting per year. He'd be starting right around that $41 million range. So even if I know we've had the number between 30 and 35, that's been a lot of the conversation over the course of the summer and now into the season. But even if it goes up from there, he's an all-star. we're talking about it going up to,
I mean, let's 41. Just, he's producing a $50+ million player.
Yeah.
There's no argument against that. That is empirical. If you look at the guys in that range, the guys we were just like, Jason was making the point that he thinks he's had a better season than Jalen Brunson. Think about that. Jalen Brunson has been a top 10 guy the last couple of years. He led his team to the conference finals last year. He's a playoff, like, you know, it's just that's the level he's been at. Now, will he sustain that? How does the rest of the season go? I've already seen it in the chat, people bringing up the OKC game, like, totally fair. I think when Austin has stinkers against good teams or athletic teams, like, that will continue to be a narrative that he's going to have to, you know, produce against. But I think up to this point in the season, he's getting the max. Like, as of right now, he's getting that full max.
Well, and you know what's crazy too? Guess what? That game against Oklahoma City was literally the only time this entire season that Austin Reeves failed to score 20 points in a basketball game. And like, when you look around at like other stars in the league, like just take Brandon Ingram, for example, he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games this season where he failed to reach 20 points. Like, when you get into that kind of second, third tier of stars, there's a lot of hot and cold in there. And Austin is just dependable bucket every single night, even when he's playing alongside Luka damn Doncic and LeBron James. Like it's indefensible at this point to not say that he's worth that level of pay.
I look at it this way, you know, yes, he's absolutely worth it. But when we get these comments coming in saying, but he was bad in the playoffs last year. Okay. The only way he could right that wrong is in the playoffs next year. So we're talking about April, May, June, hopefully, right? That's a long time from now. That's a ways away. That's a lot of basketball that you're going to spend talking about the playoffs instead of appreciating what we're seeing right now. This is fun, what we're seeing from this Lakers team right now. They're playing great on the offensive end, certainly. Austin is doing incredible things. If you're spending the whole time just sitting there looking at, well, oh, but he was bad in the playoffs last year, you can't fix that until April. He can't fix that until May. If we want to talk about the one OKC game and dismiss everything else that he did, are there legitimate concerns? Yes. But if you spend all your time just focusing on those two things and saying, oh, see, nope, he's not any good. This is all fool's gold. This is horrible. This is awful. That's just a shitty way to look at basketball, in my opinion. Basketball is fun. It's supposed to be fun. We should be able to celebrate players who do good things. And right now, Austin is among a number of players on this Lakers team that are doing very, very good things. I think that should be something that we can enjoy without having to just immediately jump to like, oh, but the playoffs, he's not as good in the playoffs, and that's going to be proven here. No, just appreciate what's happening right now, and then let him deal with the playoffs when the playoffs come.
He's also been a good playoff player for the most part in his career. He had a bad series. It happens.
As the chat is noting, I like hearing Trevor cussing.
Yeah,
that was a mic drop moment.
I can let loose a little bit more here on the collective, right? All right, let's get into the Lakers offense as we kind of merge these together. The Lakers offense with this upcoming slate of games, they have not been playing, you know, the best teams in the NBA. They do have a phenomenal offense. Currently, right now, they are the number 5 offensive rating in the NBA. What amazes me, guys, and I've talked about this quite a bit on my show, it is absurd that they are the 5th team in offensive rating in the NBA, yet are 23rd in turnover percentage. Those two things typically do not go hand in hand. And to me, that suggests that even though right now they're sitting number 5 in offensive rating overall, that their ceiling has not yet been hit on the offensive side of the basketball. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I would. And I think we're starting to see them get closer to their ceiling with the recent shooting we've seen from this group. And, you know, they've had now several games hitting 15 plus threes, shooting in the high 30s or even 40s from three. Like that's a new thing for this team. And it just makes it so much more difficult to guard them in those 4-on-3, 3-on-2 situations. And you're seeing teams like New Orleans just tried to junk the game up last night in the second half. They were picking up at around half court and zoning up really well and leveraging some of their athleticism. But it's just that if they are like Austin shooting 46% on threes over this win streak right now, and several of the other guys have rebounded back to, you know, closer to their averages. And if this group is Like, I think the turnovers are kind of baked in. It's just kind of going to be a thing with this group where it's similar to like the Warriors. That it's just part of who this group is, that they are going to have some higher turnover games. And I think part of it is a like function of the offense and how it's designed. And because Luka and Austin have the ball so much, everything is sort of funneling out of that. And it can be a little bit predictable at times. Like you sort of know where the reads are coming. It's just really difficult to stop those reads. So I think the turnover percentage can maybe get closer to league average. I don't know if they're ever going to be like an efficient elite ball handling team in that regard, or, you know, low turnover team. But the 3-point shooting, I think, has been the thing that's been like, they have so many open looks that they've been missing for the first 15, 16 games of the season, that if that just normalizes to closer to league average, like that's where I just don't know how you stop this team. And if they're a better 3-point shooting team, can reduce the turnovers, that's what we're talking about. Top three, and maybe even just the best offense in the NBA.
Yeah, right now, the Lakers, in terms of 3-point percentage, 21st in the NBA. Jason, what is the ceiling offensively for this team? They're top five right now. Where can they finish the season at?
The ceiling is maintaining this, what they've been doing, which I mean, again, the numbers they're putting up over the course of this stretch offensively are kind of outrageous. And there's, you know, Jovan made really good points having to do with the strength of schedule. But there are certain things you expect to see when you're playing against a weaker stretch of schedule. Like, you want to see dominant statistical performance. For all the talk about Lakers net rating stuff, they have a plus 14 net rating in this 7-game streak. That's what you want to see. You're playing bad teams, we want to see you kick their butts. That's what they did, right? Or specific units that can cause problems, right? Like, the Bucks offense is an offense that has caused problems for a lot of teams with their rim pressure and their shooting. The Lakers guarded them really well. Or the Mavericks defense. That's a very good defense that was very good before they got Anthony Davis back. And the Lakers literally picked that Dallas Mavericks defense to pieces. And, you know, when I started to, when I went back and rewatched all the buckets, quite literally Dallas tried everything in that game. Like, they doubled off the opening tip, right? So we saw some straight two on the ball situations against Luka. We saw a high variety of different pick and roll coverages, some deep drop, some high drop, some switching with the bigs, some blitzing. We saw a little bit of zone. We saw like literally every conceivable coverage in that Dallas Mavericks game. And like every single one of them got torched for one reason or another. One of the reasons why the Mavs could not bring their bigs up to the level in like a high drop or even in switches, both Austin and Luka were splitting Daniel Gafford and Anthony Davis at the level and just getting past them all the way to the basket over and over and over again. And like, those are two of the more mobile bigs that you'll run into in the NBA, and Austin and Luka are going right past them. If you switch, obviously it's the same dynamic. They give up dribble penetration, or now Austin and Luka have their step back three going to such a high level. Austin has been attacking downhill and pick and roll like crazy and doing all sorts of damage. He's gotten so good at making the skip read when he engages the low man. He's been hitting that read nonstop over the last few games. Luka's got all the mid-range shot making if you run any sort of traditional drop. And then Trevor, you hit this at the top of the show, but like, it is literally becoming muscle memory the way they're attacking these two on the ball situations. And they are getting so many easy shots that have so many simple sequences. Like, oh, Luka drives off of a ball screen at the top and Jeremiah Fears steps over and nail help, swing to Austin, swing to Rui in the left corner, wide open three. Or here's LeBron posting up on the left block and Austin's man is doubling from one pass away, just simple pitch back to Austin. Austin hits a catch and shoot three. Or like, even when it comes to the spacing stuff, to Jovan's point, to me, Austin was the key figure there, because Austin was the guy that a lot of these sequences were ending with him getting an open catch and shoot look. He's been hitting them now. He's up to this now because of this hot streak over the last week and a half. He's now shooting 46% on unguarded catch and shoot threes this season. That's a big boost to them. And Luka, you know, it's so funny because like, Luka doesn't really I've seen him ISO his wide open catch and shoot threes. Like, it's hard to explain. Like, he'll catch it wide open, and instead of taking the three, he'll find some way to build rhythm. Like, he beat Cooper Flagg on one where he got a layup where it should have just been a catch and shoot three, but he kind of like showed the ball and like messed around with it a little bit and beat Cooper Flagg to the basket and got all the way to a layup. Or he had that one against Klay Thompson that he turned into like a triple jab step, like contested, like face up jump shot. But like Luka's essentially taking his catch and shoot opportunities and just turning them into advantage ISOs, and he's scoring on those. And so because LeBron can shoot and Rui can shoot, now Austin's knocking down these shots and DeAndre Ayton's like doing all sorts of stuff, scoring in the short roll, deep seals against different types of advantages, whether it's a zone or a switch, offensive rebounding. Like, they are quite frankly impossible to guard. And like, and to your point, Trevor, like, they're not at where they're capable of reaching yet. Like, LeBron can get to another level. Jake LaRavia missed like a half dozen butt naked threes yesterday. Like, there's still a bunch of stuff that they need to get into a rhythm, and they're already the best half court offense in the NBA. And so that's where it starts to get exciting. Like, if they can get to the point where they're the number one half court offense in the NBA with a little bit of separation between them and the pack, and that becomes the indomitable unit that they bring to the table, it just buys them so much margin for error in the other parts of the game.
Yeah, I do think they've got a lot of opportunities here to continue growing. You talk about Luka not necessarily taking the wide open threes. There's a lot of fans right now that are frustrated with Luka's three-point shooting, like the attempts that he does take. But there's times where it almost feels like Luka is trying to make things more challenging for himself. Like, he's going to beat somebody just to prove that he can beat somebody, even if the open shot is there. He's doing some absolutely unreal things. But I remember that play that you're talking about with Cooper Flagg. I thought the exact same thing. I'm like, why didn't Luka just shoot the three? Oh, he wanted to go burn Cooper Flagg on the closeout instead. That's Luka just playing his own game inside the game.
He's a genius. He's basketball genius.
He is. Let's go here. Yeah, I had a question that came in directly for Jason, so I want to give him a chance to respond to it. For Jason, how do you see Ant better than Austin Reaves this season when they average the same points, more assists and rebounds, better field goal / free throw percentage, and a better team record?
That's fair. I mean, I think you could say the same thing about Tyrese Maxey. Tyrese Maxey has been scoring the ball more effectively, but Austin has been just about as efficient as a shot creator, if not more. Actually, there's 22 players in the NBA that have run at least 200 pick and rolls this year, including passes, and Austin's currently the second most efficient out of that entire group. So he's been one of the most efficient pick and roll players in the league. To me, there's also the, like, Austin on the margins, just not giving up as much like we talked about earlier. So if you want to argue him over Ant and over Tyrese, now he's the eighth best player in the NBA to start the season. So I think that's probably about as high as you could argue him. I think Steph, just his offensive engine capability, like, still right now, to give you an idea, the Lakers, I think, have a 115 offensive rating with Austin on the floor, but Luka and LeBron off. And there's a level of offense that you get from a team with Steph on the floor that I think is still superior. Cade is just eating an enormous amount of usage and doing a lot of shot creation for literally the second best team in the league. So like, I think once you get up to eight, it gets tough to argue, but like, anywhere in that 8 to 10 range is like a completely defensible place to put Austin right now for just no reputation. Who's playing the best to this point?
Look like you have something you want to add to that.
No, I mean, I think you guys know how I feel about Austin, but even when comparing him to number one options, I think we have to factor in that. I think there would be a different, like, if you just swapped Ant and Austin, I do think Minnesota would be worse. That's where, like, even if you can compare the numbers, but there's always context behind the numbers, right? And I think that's what we try to do here is break that down and why that matters. But I just don't know. I don't know that. I think his numbers would probably come down as the number one option in Minnesota overall. And I think that team would not be as good. And it's no shade on him. It's just we're talking about Ant, who's been the fifth or sixth best player probably in the NBA over the last two seasons. So, there's levels to it, right? And while Austin might be putting up similar numbers, he's largely been the number two option this season. We have seen he's put up some big numbers as the number one option, but it has been in smaller stretches of games, a couple games here, a couple games there. I think it's different doing it every single night for 82 games, right? So this, I mean, it's funny now we're talking about, like, can Austin be a number one option versus, like, can Austin be, there was a time going back to even last season, people didn't think he could be a true number three on, like, a really good team. So you know, he keeps elevating the conversation, and now I think he's shown he could be a number two, which is maybe even higher than I thought he could be at this point. But yeah, I mean, at number one versus number two, I do think there's a key distinction there. And for some of these, if you put him on New York instead of Brunson, you put him on Detroit instead of Cade, you put him on Minnesota instead of Ant, I do think those teams get worse.
I think those are really good points. I think it's kind of like a weird conversation to quantify statistically, because like in a weird way, Austin putting up the numbers he's putting up as a number two are super impressive because he's doing it without stepping on Luka's toes. But the flip side is, yes, if he was a number one, like for instance, like let's say that you swapped Austin to a team where he could be a number one option. Like, is he averaging 32 right now? Like maybe, because he's getting an extra three or four shot attempts a game than over what he's taking right now. But the degree of difficulty likely skyrockets and an efficiency probably tanks quite a bit, right? Like, and for the record, some of his higher scoring games that he had earlier in the year where he had to do more weren't necessarily his most efficient games, like the Minnesota game where he hit the game winner as a classic example. But yeah, Jovan's making a very important point. Like it's fundamentally different being Jalen Brunson on the Knicks than it is being Austin Reaves on the Lakers.
100% agree. That is absolutely a big factor in terms of what the role is overall, what their slotting is on that specific team. All right, I want to get into the slate of upcoming games that we're going to devote the final segment to the Q&A here. Before we do, we need to give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is SeatGeek. Always so much fun to go see the Lakers live. That's why we got to give SeatGeek a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. Over 70,000 events on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. The NFL and college football and NBA are in full swing. You can even get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. The app is super, super easy to use. I've gone to a number of different events, including Lakers games, using SeatGeek. Very simple to go in there and get a real good sense of the value for your ticket. SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know if you're getting a good deal. You just look for the green dots. Green means good. Red means bad. Tells you everything you need to know about the value of the tickets you're getting. Plus, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, we've got a code for you. You can use code LakersCollective10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with the promo code LakersCollective10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Go check out SeatGeek, everybody. We appreciate it when you support the companies that help support us. And SeatGeek is a great partner of this show. All right, guys, let us get us back into the right spots there. There we go. So the upcoming stretch, I know we've touched upon it a little bit here, but we've got Phoenix tonight, second night of a back-to-back, then at Toronto, at Boston, the Boston game, second night of a back-to-back as well. Those are on the road. At Philly, and then against San Antonio, potentially with OKC on the other side of that, should they get through the San Antonio matchup. I guess first, let's go into what we hope to see from the Lakers tonight against the Suns, and then what do we need to see moving forward with this team into this more difficult stretch, all above 500 teams here of the schedule here. Jovan, let's start with you.
Yeah, tonight I'm going to be looking at their defense, particularly their perimeter rotations. Phoenix has several guys going through their roster. Grayson Allen shooting 44% on threes. Colin Gillespie shooting 43%. Jalen Green has only played a couple games, but he's shooting 43% since his return. 42% for Royce O'Neal. And old Laker friend Jordan Goodwin shooting 36%. So this is a team that I think will test the Lakers at the three-point line, and that I think continues to still be an area that the Lakers are up and down in. And part of it is by design. They want to play off certain shooters, or they care more about their shell defense and protecting the paint and trying to stop teams from creating driving kick opportunities, and they'll live with some of those corner swings or corner skip passes. But I think Phoenix can test that. They also have an elite one-on-one scorer in Devin Booker, who I am interested to see if, you know, assuming Marcus Smart plays tonight, like, does he get that matchup at some point, or how do the Lakers go about, like, Austin has actually defended Booker reasonably well going back over the last couple of years. So I assume that they go with the normal starters. Austin will probably start on Booker, but this is a jump up in competition. So LA going from the Pelicans, who were, again, one of the worst teams in the NBA without their five highest paid players, to the Suns, like that is a notable jump in competition. So I want to see LA rise to the moment, and it's the best team they've played since the Bucks. And I just want to see how they come out and set an early tone again, like they did last night.
Jason, what about you? What are you hoping to see tonight's game and moving forward?
Yeah, there are really good points by Jovan regarding Phoenix's three-point shooting. They're like they're an aggressive three-point shooting team. Like, they got several guys that are like, if you're there but you're not there, they'll burn you. And for a Lakers team that struggled with soft switching at times over the years, especially in the last couple of years, like, that is something that I worry about in this particular matchup. Also, Dylan Brooks has always been a guy that's given Luka just a little bit of trouble. He's big and bulky and can get up underneath him and withstand some of his bully ball tactics. Some of you Lakers fans may or may not remember a game down in Houston last year where, or they might have been in LA, but where Houston gave the Lakers some issues with Dylan Brooks guarding LeBron and Luka at the end of the game and just doing a number on both of them. But this is the beauty of having the trio all together, having Luka, LeBron, and Austin. If Luka can eat up Dylan Brooks as a matchup, that's going to kind of slot everyone else in a different spot. By the way, I'm not sure if Ryan Dunn's playing tonight. I know he's been hurt.
He's listed as probable right now.
Okay, so if Ryan Dunn plays,
come on now, Jason. Everybody plays against the Lakers.
So Ryan Dunn obviously gives you another. He's guarded LeBron well over the course of last season, if you guys remember. And so it could be one of those games where the Lakers have to deploy some more creative stuff in terms of three-man action or initiating with Austin to try to get LeBron and Luka into better advantage positions. This is very different than the Dallas matchup. The Dallas matchup, they're an elite defense because of their aggregate size and their ability to protect the basket, defensive rebound, all that kind of stuff. This Phoenix team, it's elite perimeter defense. And like, Max Christie, love him, completely hopeless guarding Luka Doncic. You know what I mean? So like, there's some different perimeter matchups that could give the Lakers some issues tonight. To me, this is one of those games where like, the Lakers are going to have to throw an A punch to win. If they don't, I think Phoenix is a team that could sneak them. As far as the rest of the schedule goes, like, going on the road, you know, Boston, Toronto, and Philly are, in addition to being difficult teams to beat in their building, they're all very fast. They're all very fast, and they bring like different kind of like challenges to the table. Boston runs a lot of really sophisticated action out top that involves usually Jaylen Brown and two shooters. And so there's Jaylen Brown has been doing a ton of damage to teams driving out of like botch switches and situations where he gets an angle because a guy lingers too long on Peyton Pritchard or lingers too long on Derek White. Both Peyton Pritchard and Derek White have been amazing as of late. Pritchard just annihilated the Cavs yesterday. Derek White was the big reason they beat the Pistons a couple nights ago with his explosion in the second half. Like, Boston brings all these guards that can cause problems on the perimeter. Toronto, they're a very good defensive team that'll run it down your throat and they'll drive and kick you to death. I'm not as worried about them defensively in the half court in that matchup. I actually think they match up reasonably well with Toronto in the half court. But watch out for Jamal Shedd and Emmanuel Quickley's dribble penetration. Those guys can beat dudes off the dribble. That could be a problem for the Lakers and just their overall transition attack. And then Philly, I mean, Philly's been playing just awful defense for a long time now, but they can really score the basketball. Tyrese had another 40-something last night. He can really cause problems. So they each provide different challenges. But what I specifically like about this three-game set is it's a massive uptick in speed that they're playing against. And I don't know about you guys, but I have everything circled for that OKC Lakers rematch in the in-season tournament. I want to see that game so bad. And by the way, I'm not taking San Antonio for granted. Wouldn't be surprised if Wemby's back by then, and they are a huge problem. Do not think that they have an automatic win by any stretch there. But if they can somehow get through San Antonio, and if in Oklahoma City predictably beats Phoenix, they're going to have that showdown there. And I really like that they're not playing OKC tomorrow, because they have picked up a handful of bad habits in terms of their possession-to-possession consistency and effort. Also, some bad shot selection mixed in with all that offense that I watched. There are some really stupid possessions where they jack up something dumb in the first 10 seconds. And they, you know, so like, having this dead serious stretch of basketball for a week and a half leading into a potential rematch with Oklahoma City, I almost look like is the ideal ramp up. Also, by that point, LeBron will have, you know, close to 10 games under his belt. So like, I'm looking at the schedule as a much needed ramp up for a rematch with OKC where they desperately need to avail themselves better than they did in the first one.
Yeah, that is on the money. This is going to be a sharpening period here for the Lakers. They may drop a few of these games. Mm-hmm. I've been saying a loss is coming for this team. You can see it in some of the bad habits they picked up. They're winning seven games in a row. That's fantastic. Of course, celebrate that. They're beating the teams that are in front of them. But there is going to be an adjustment as you go from these below 500 teams they've been playing, with the exception of Milwaukee, who are above 500 at the time, to now you're going up against some teams where your margin of error is simply not as high, where if you make some of the mistakes that you made, say, against New Orleans last night, you make those mistakes against Phoenix, and it's going to really cost you. And particularly the Phoenix matchup I'm interested in, because as we mentioned, the perimeter defense is so good. That's the style of team that the Lakers have struggled with, the teams that have the perimeter defense to keep them out of the paint. So much of their offense thrives when they get paint touches, often out of the pick and roll. But Atlanta did a nice job keeping them out of the paint. That ended up being a loss. Of course, OKC did a nice job keeping them out of the paint. That ended up being a loss. So I'm curious to see how the Lakers attack this Suns team. And I do think it's going to be not just an adjustment for this game, but for this next stretch of games. They're going to have to be more focused. And that's one thing that has ebbed and flowed throughout games, is their level of focus, their level of sharpness as games have gone on. They seem to want to flip the switch to a degree when they have to. I think they're going to have to be very locked in to win during these games. And they may wind up getting the tough reminder of how locked in they need to be in order to win games. There may be a game or two that they wind up picking up an L that maybe they shouldn't have, but they learn the lesson, and it's going to prepare them more for that OKC game. So I think tonight's game is going to be a nice indication of how far this offense has come because of what they can do on the perimeter defensively. I'll tell you two key areas I'm going to be keeping an eye on. It's the Lakers' turnovers. That's an every night thing with this team, keeping an eye on turnovers. But Phoenix, number one in the NBA in steals per game. They've got a number of guys who are really good at finding steals, including our old friend Jordan Goodwin. But Phoenix also a sneaky good offensive rebounding team. So the Lakers' attention to detail there also going to be critical.
Yeah, and one thing with this streak, so right now over the last seven games, the Lakers are number two in offense and number 12 in defense. But that number 12 in defense is heavily carried by the first two games of the streak against New Orleans and against Milwaukee, which might be the Lakers' two best defensive performances of the season. I think the Milwaukee game is their best defensive performance of the season, but then the New Orleans one is like in that conversation for second best. Since those two wins, so over the past five wins, they are 20th in defense and still second in offense. So they are really being carried right now by their offense more so than their defense, which is not breaking news. But I think these teams coming up are going to test that. And these are teams that can match LA dropping 120, 125, 130 on a nightly basis, but are also better defensively and just better competition overall. So if the 20th ranked defense shows up over the next 5 to 6 games, that's where they might have like a 3-3 or 4-2 stretch rather than a 5-1 or 6-0 stretch.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Let's get into some of our chat questions and comments that we didn't get to yet. I'm sorry, Jovan. His first one.
I know which one it is.
I listen to every post-game show. Tell me, Jovan, why do you have such a deep hatred for Rui Hachimura? Isn't it funny the way any kind of criticism gets turned into you hate that player?
Well, it's funny for me because I think I have like two labels that have been slapped on me, which are that I'm an Austin stan and that I hate Rui. When I think when we did the starting lineup discussion, we all agreed that Rui should probably be coming off the bench. I think Jason made the argument for Rui, but it wasn't, he wasn't even like arguing for Rui as like the ideal fit starter. It was more so just based on the options that like you could make that case. And I think even since then, Jason has, you know, I don't want to speak
to
Jason,
politics.
but the politics angle. And, so, you know, that's part of it. And then the Austin thing, like we just talked about Austin as an all-star, like third team All-NBA guy, but then like I'm somehow the Austin stan. But with Rui, I think Rui is a good player. I think Rui is a really good offensive player. I think my issue with Rui is not even with Rui, it's with how the Lakers are using Rui, which is starting him in a starting group that, in my opinion, needs a much better perimeter defender/stopper, and using him in that way in part, I think, due to the politics, in part because they are very high on Rui. They discovered Rui they unlocked his potential after Washington was giving up on him. And the Lakers like to pride themselves on an Austin, a Rui, a Max Christie, like these guys that they discover. It is a point of pride for the organization and the front office, which I get. But the truth is, we've said the fifth starter probably isn't on this team, and the guy who unlocks what the other four do and just, you know, compliments them, I think that player is probably on another roster right now. But, you know, I don't want to go to the lineup data because then I'm going to be called a hater. But right now he has been among the rotation guys, the most detrimental player in terms of on off defense. And I just think, like, I think he's regressed from last season defensively. I don't think he's been as good this season. And I just think for what the Lakers need, I think Marcus Smart is a better fit, but there also probably is a better fit on a different roster. So it's not, I think Rui can be a starter in the league. I think Rui could be a 30 plus minute a night guy in the league. I just think you probably need a different roster construction to optimize Rui. And the points I've made, like, I think you need an elite rim protector and an elite wing defender, and Rui should probably be your worst front court defender. The issue for the Lakers is they are using Rui right now as their best front court defender. And that, I just think, is why they've largely been a bottom 10 defense this season.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with everything you said there. I don't hate Rui. I like Rui just fine. I think what he does very well. You need guys who can hit shots playing off of Luka, playing off of LeBron, and Rui has been one of the best in the NBA at it. I haven't looked in the last couple of days, but last I looked, I think he was third in the NBA in three-point percentage. He has been a phenomenal shooter for now. This is going on three straight seasons that he's been above 50% from the field, above 40% from three. But there's a lot of other areas of his game that need work. So part of, you know, it's easy for Rui to get support behind him because what he does very well is also very loud. Hey, I remember that guy knocked down shots in a game. I remember that guy hit a tough fadeaway 15 footer, which is, you know, one of his go-to shots. Whereas where he doesn't succeed isn't going to be as loud to the average fan just watching and seeing him miss an off-ball defensive rotation or something to that degree. So that's part of the conversation with Rui as well. I like him as a player. I just would like him better if he's coming off the bench for the Lakers versus being in the starting lineup and being in that role, like Jovan's saying, where he has to be a plus defender, because that's simply just, it's just not what he is. All right, let's go here. OKC has 10 useful players and 3 high picks. Some teams will offer a future pick or swap or an expiring for a player or pick. Could OKC do it with LA? They could, but my thinking, guys, would be if I'm OKC and I'm going to try to kick the can down the road a little bit because I don't have room on my roster because I'm just too damn talented, and the Lakers are the 2 seed in the West, I'm making that swap with someone else rather than make my competition better, knowing that if the Lakers are able to free up more trade availability because they reset the Stepien rule by adding more recent draft capital or something like that, that only gives the Lakers a chance to get better. If I'm OKC, strategically, I'm making that trade with a different team that's not the number 2 seed.
Yeah, I'm not doing any business with Houston, Denver, the Lakers, Orlando, New York, Detroit. Like any of those teams, I'm not touching with a 10-foot pole. If I'm OKC, I'm dealing with the bottom of the league.
You could argue Luka is their biggest threat in the West for the next half decade. You know, it's probably Luka or Wemby. So I'm not helping Luka if I'm OKC.
All right, let's go here. Mamadou said, I know we lack athleticism and defense, but I also think we have a bench weakness. Do you guys think we're really dependent on Austin and Luka? That way, yeah, the Lakers are top heavy to a degree as a team. As far as the bench, obviously when everybody's healthy, they have more depth, but are they the deepest team? They certainly are not, and they can be inconsistent, particularly in the area of bench scoring as well. They don't have a whole lot of that. I don't think the Lakers have a terrible bench, but it's not like the bench is going to go out there and win you a game. It's going to be on Luka. It's going to be on Austin. When he gets up to speed, it'll be on LeBron to ultimately see them across the finish line.
I actually think that the Lakers' depth is a strength, and this is a credit to Rob Pelinka. And I have not been a fan of everything he's done over the course of the last 5 years, but I do think this last offseason, just bringing in 3 rotation level players and losing one, has added that bit of depth. And one of the things that, you know, yeah, the Lakers are top heavy with LeBron, Austin, and Luka, but those 3 guys are so good And having three of them allows you to stagger them in a way that you always have two of them on the court. And then on nights where one of them's out for an injury or to rest, like LeBron last night, you always have one of them on the court. And what that does is it kind of creates all of these like achievable roles elsewhere. And what I've actually noticed is it's like, oh, Ayton's out for a game. Well, Maxey and Jackson is a perfectly fine center rotation for the NBA regular season when you have the type of top-end talent that they have. Oh, Rui can easily just slot down and play the four when LeBron's out of the lineup. Like, oh, we just need a little bit more Dalton Connect tonight. Or, you know, to start the second half against New Orleans, there's going to be a few more possessions where we run action for Gabe, right? And, like, one of the things, too, when it comes to ball handling, too, like, I'm not saying that Max or Marcus are the types of players that you want running 20 pick and rolls in a game, but both of them can do just a little bit more when you need them to because the rotation tilts one way or another. Like it seems to me the Lakers have been very healthy this year, to be clear. That's an important bit of context in their record beyond the stars. Obviously LeBron's missed some time and Luka missed some time early in the season. And Austin had the groin injury or whatever it was he had. But for the most part, they've had at least two of their stars available for the majority of their games. And their role player talent has been generally available. That said, on the handful of situations where a dude's been out for one reason or another, it just seems like the Lakers have a lot of good basketball players that can step into roles. I actually think depth has been a strength. And the last thing I'll say is, I think when we look at like bench scoring, like, the Lakers are never going to have a five bench man lineup on the floor. So it's not really, it's more, can those lineups score? And consistently all season, whatever variation of the Lakers lineup has been out there has been able to score.
They are 30th by nearly 5 points per game, which I think is 30th in bench scoring, averaging about just under 24. The next closest is at just under 29. So, I mean, it has been, I think the bigger issue has been, in my opinion, like JJ's lack of confidence in the bench too. Like even last night, I thought, and it seems like they avoided disaster with DeAndre Ayton's like knee situation. But my immediate thought when DeAndre Ayton had the knee collision with Derek Queen was like, why is DeAndre Ayton even out there right now? And the fact like Austin didn't need to play 40 minutes last night. So I think in general, you know, I think JJ has erred on playing the starters a little bit more, which like I get to an extent, but last night could have been a game Austin played 35, 36 minutes. Luka only played 35. I think they would have been okay and still won the game. Maybe they you know, it's a little bit tighter there in the fourth at some point, but I think in general, part of it's been like the rotation skewing far more in the starters' direction minutes-wise, which has deflated the bench scoring.
So JJ is now Tibbs.
A little bit, you know, not quite as extreme.
Sure. He did play five guys for an entire half, but that was in the playoffs. That's a different situation. All right. McLean said, looking forward to the Lakers Spurs rematch. I believe will end differently with De'Aaron Fox and Dylan Harper. Would be a great first round matchup. Yeah. And I think, of course, the big question is, will Wemby be available for that game or not? But sure. You know, De'Aaron Fox has a history with the Lakers from his time with the Kings, has had some big games against LA. So I'm excited for it. I think, you know, even if Wemby doesn't play, the Spurs are a dangerous, dangerous team to deal with. And if Wemby does play, it is going to be an absolute battle. As Jason said a little bit ago, you definitely can't look past San Antonio and assume the Lakers are going to advance in the tournament and win that game. It will be an absolute fight.
They lost Wemby 7 games ago. They lost Steph Castle 6 games ago, and they've gone 5-2 in those 7 games. And De'Aaron Fox has been the reason why. He's been unbelievable. He's kind of like a sneaky, one of the better cross-court passers in the league. So one of the things that's obviously he brings his downhill ability and ball screens, but he's also been shooting the ball really well over the last couple of weeks. And so teams have had no choice but to guard his actions 3-on-2. And he's just really good at skipping the ball across the court. All their young players are playing super well. Devin Vassell's hooping his ass off. He literally just like single-handedly beat Denver the other night. Keldon Johnson's playing super well. Luke Kornet's back and is playing super well. They're scrappy and athletic on the perimeter, which is always going to be something that causes the Lakers some issues. I mean, we saw them cause the Lakers some issues in that game. That was a come-from-behind victory at home in that specific matchup. Like, I would be looking at that Spurs-Lakers game as like a legitimate like test, like a real test in a must-win game for the Lakers against like a no worse than the, what, the fifth best team in the West? Like, no worse than that? Like, they're really good.
Yeah, they've definitely made the leap this year. There were questions coming into the season. Would they be, and most had them as the team, that if somebody was going to take the leap, it would be them. I think they've definitely jumped up into that upper tier in the Western Conference. And it's not all Wemby. There's other guys that are doing stuff as well. That's what makes the Spurs almost, you know, this would be a conversation for another day, but a scary team at the trade deadline, where if they add another piece, whew, that could be big trouble there. Kendrick said, not sure where it would rank all time, but as far back as the NBA website goes, the Lakers so far are having the most efficient pick and roll ball handling season, then at 1.1 points per possession and scoring frequency of 50.3%. Guys, we've spent a lot of time giving Austin Reeves his flowers. Of course, Luka deserves all of this as well. How does DeAndre Ayton, though, who we haven't really talked about much, how does he fit into this stat being as strong as it is?
He's a huge part of it. And that was something I noted after the Dallas game, that I think we've now had several instances in which we've seen the difference between DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes and the way that elevates LA's offensive attack. And you know, going back to the Minnesota series, Minnesota was able to neutralize Jackson Hayes and play him off the floor. And part of it, you know, he didn't play well in his brief stints, but he also was neutralized offensively with their switching and his inability to punish mismatches or just be an effective offensive player once they were you know, switching those pick and roll actions. With DeAndre Ayton, he will you know, drop his shoulder into you if he gets a mismatch, and you know, he is really nice soft touch around the basket. He will get fouled, but then he also is such an effective short roll scorer and playmaker. And you know, the playmaking, I think, has gotten better with the decision making. He's reduced the turnovers lately, so he's just been in a really nice groove. And you know, he's just added this dynamic and this dimension to the offense that they did not have post AD, and is clearly the best, you know, big man scorer they've had in the LeBron era outside of AD. So his return, we saw the difference offensively, and he's just, I think, is such a nice pick and roll partner for both Luka and Austin. The lobs continue to be every night Austin throws one of the worst lobs I've ever seen in my life. Oh, it's my just a nightly thing. But outside of that, you know, the two bad connection there between Ayton and Luka, Ayton and Austin, has been incredible.
So out of the eight players in the NBA that have logged at least 50 possessions as a role man, Nikola Jokic is number one. Big surprise there. A 137 offensive rating in his catches in the role. DeAndre Ayton's number two on that list, though. He's personally shooting 67% from the field on rolls. 1.29 points per possession. And I mean, some of that is like we all kind of saw that coming. Like big shock, DeAndre Ayton. He's a really skilled role man, and he came right in and did an amazing job benefiting from the attention from Austin and Luka. But man, like, I think he's been even better than we could have thought he'd be at this point. And Kendrick, last thing, dude, a 50% score percentage on a pick and roll is crazy. Mm-hmm. That is a crazy stat. Synergy right now has him at 50.8, so a little bit higher. That's including passes. But like if you run a ball screen and you're more than likely going to get a point out of it, that's a wild stat for a play type that is usually not that efficient.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. They've been insane. While we're on the topic of DA, I don't know why it's not letting me put it on the screen right now. There it is. Finally goes. This one. Instead of sleeper ad, you three need a Hans Wiseman hair loss advertisement. I've been in a hat phase for like a couple of years now, but I need a haircut for sure. But I need to start, you know, styling my hair too, I guess, to fit in here on the show. But he said, JK, tell me about the double big minutes. I'd like to see DA at the four and Jax at the five. LeBron, Luka, Jason, I can tell by the look on your face, you're thinking the same thing I am. This is fundamentally, this idea of going Hayes and Ayton on the floor is fundamentally what the Lakers have gone away from, and is part of the reason why we're not seeing Jared Vanderbilt. out there with the team. Jason, what are your thoughts on trying a double big lineup? I guess specifically we think about it for maybe the Houston matchup.
Aziz, we're winning basketball games right now, man. We don't want to go and do something crazy like play Jackson and DeAndre at the same time. I think you'll see a little bit of it in the form of Maxey. You know, it'll be very matchup specific. Like Christmas Day, don't be surprised if we see a little bit of that against Houston. Certain types of teams that have less jump shooting, we might see it on occasion. It's not something you want to throw away, but like ultimately the Lakers have two starting power forwards. So the best thing you can do for that rotation is to keep your centers to just 48 minutes a game. That'll allow you to have, and like Rui, you know, is clearly, if you're just looking at pure talent, he's one of your five best players. So like, as long as he's on the team before he gets traded, you want to keep him on the floor as much as possible. And ideally not as much at the three as you can, which means he's going to be spelling LeBron at the four for a good half of his minutes. And the last thing you want to do is push LeBron and Rui more towards the three when they're slow. So yeah, like it's not a never use kind of thing. I think if they do use it, it'll be more like Maxey or Vando, like Trevor was saying. But I think it's very matchup specific, and it's because the Lakers have two awesome starting fours.
All right, let's go. This one says, extra super chat just to support the channel. Well, thank you. We appreciate you. You're three of my favorite people to watch. Also, Jason, Jovan agree with the takes on Ant and AR. Guys, we'll get through a few more of these. We'll have to save a few of them for next time. Remember, we are going twice a week now, so we're going to be back on Thursday. What are we doing with that one? Is that 8 a.m. Pacific time we're doing Thursday?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
we're doing an early one Thursday. So that's going to be coming up. We will be back with the second show. I just want to get to this one. Throwing in the different levels of swearing that I employ depending on which channel I happen to be on. I love it. So love you guys. Can't believe the Avengers have assembled. Guys, as I think that's a pretty good place to wrap things up here. Everybody who's here, who's been watching live, we love all you being here, hanging out with us. This has been a lot of fun for us. This is something that's been, you know, in the works for a bit, the Lakers Collective, and this has been a blast for all of us. And we're so happy and thankful for all of you who have been here, for the response that we've received, how many kind words we've received about this show. Truly, we really, really appreciate it, and are really looking forward to what the future is going to bring with this show.
Hell yeah, I love working with you guys too. And shout out to the Lakers actually playing some basketball that's worth talking about. And again, to like Trevor said, just so thankful for you guys. None of us would get to do what we do if it wasn't for you. And just so you know, we do truly appreciate it.
Yeah, the spirit of, you know, Thanksgiving just happened. Again, I wanted to reiterate thank you. Thank both of you for doing this show with me. And it's been a lot of fun. But also thank you to the chat. Thank you to the audience. And the next time we speak in a few days, the Lakers will have played the Suns and the Raptors, two of the biggest surprise teams in the NBA this season. So excited to break down those two games.
Yep, absolutely. And super chats that came in that we did not get to, there are a few of them. We apologize we didn't get to them here live, but we will save them. We'll either put them on a standalone video between now and the next show, and so they will get addressed, or we'll add them to our next show. One way or another, they will not go unanswered. We will make sure that we get to all of them. And of course, we do appreciate those. Thank you. You guys are the Trace Lane Chase. I love that. So a little behind the scenes, that I think Jovan, it was you that did this, that changed our group text to Trace Lane Chase. That is now officially,
which by the way, naming group chats is such a great way to help actually find group chats faster. Nothing's more confusing than when you're scrolling through your text feed and it's just a bunch of names with commas and you're like, what am I looking for? No, I just know.
There we go.
Now we know.
It's the audience named it.
That's right.
They bestowed it upon us.
It's officially taken hold. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Once again, double check. Make sure you are subscribed to the channel. We'll be back Thursday, 8 a.m. Pacific time to talk more Lakers basketball. Remember, from here on out, we are twice a week. Thank you, everybody. Till then, see ya and stay safe.